The following program has been brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink. The Museum of Food and Drink is hosting a Get the Ball Rolling fundraiser Sunday, March 27th at 1 p.m. at Del Posto. You can buy tickets at mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Remix. You know that crash is just a signature sound of our remixes.
I think that's actually the signature sound of every remix or error. It's like, how do I get out of this?
Yeah.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. We're your hosts, Finger on the Pulse. I'm Terry. Just kidding. I'm DJ Never Forget.
Was that real?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay. And I'm Terry Diabolic. And hey, episode 70. Well done.
Episode 70. Also to announce that we will be taking a break.
With a bullet. We're going to be taking a break with a bullet.
Yeah, with a bullet.
People haven't seen this type of breakage since Charlie Sheen went off the rails.
This will be the last year that we do for a couple of months. I will be heading out west for work, and
I'll be heading to the cooking channel to produce Kelsey's Essentials.
So, but for all of those who are missing, would be missing us, you can go back and check out all of our previous episodes.
All of them. Check them out.
They're all up for podcast. Just go to iTunes and look for Snacky Tunes. Or you could go to our blog and listen to the comp that came out last week. Just FOTPNYC.com. And we got a lot of... We want to just thank... First off, thank you to Shelly.
Heaps thanks, Shelly.
To Shelly, who did an amazing job with PR. All the bands that were involved in it. And all the people that wrote about it, including Amrit from Stereo Gun, who was on the show today.
Hello.
Segway.
Hi, guys.
Unscripted.
Hey, I'm really sorry that your trailer wasn't ready, TV star.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
Oh, my God. Stop that voice.
I guess you guys
stop
weren't ready for my radio voice.
Oh, God.
And so we're going to have Amrit on in the second half of the show to talk about South by Southwest, which is, we're in the midst of it.
We're just not there yet. But first up, we have Brian Ray of a small, unknown restaurant, Budokan.
Tiny. Yeah.
Real tiny. Upstart, right?
Yeah.
like 20
it's
seats.
A pop-up, right?
Real pop-up restaurant. No. Brian Ray is the executive chef of Budokan, which is probably one of the most famous restaurants in New York, if not the world.
Wow.
And as native Philadelphians, we are aware of the empire that it extends to. Brian.
Sweet. Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
So 75% of the people here actually are native Philadelphians. I have Philadelphia roots.
I grew up in King of Prussia.
Oh, yeah.
I go to King of Prussia Mall.
Flyers fan?
Flyers, Eagles, absolutely.
Yep, fantastic.
I've had many meals at Budokan, actually.
Cool.
Yeah. It's wonderful.
So you are familiar with the Love the Flyers team, Walk and Break Your Heart every year.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Brian, how does one wind up as the co-executive chef at what is arguably the most popular and consistently popular restaurant in all of New York City?
Sure. Well, that's a good question, especially a Chinese restaurant.
Yes.
So, time frame. I grew up in Philadelphia, worked in restaurants there. I needed to change, so I just on a whim moved to Vegas. In Vegas, I met a guy, Bobby Flay. He needed...
Up-and-coming chef as well?
Up-and-coming chef also. Yeah. No name. Pop-up. So, he was opening a restaurant, Mesa Grill, in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Needed, you know, a team there, so I worked with him for 9 months.
Were you part of the documentary on...
I was, yeah.
Okay.
I have a dumb line. I said, like, I was struggling making tamales or something, and I said, this is the first time I ever made this, so I'm not good at it.
What's the name of the documentary? Behind the Restaurant or something?
Yeah.
It's the same, Rock Trim Productions, the same who's doing the show I'm going to work on.
Oh, cool.
They were Dan Cohen and Sons then, but yeah, that was a great documentary.
Yep, I was in it. So...
Vegas, huh?
Yeah, Vegas.
What's your game?
Blackjack.
Mm.
Yeah. Are you good at it?
Who is? Yeah. No.
The house.
Yeah.
You know. So you're out in Vegas.
Yep.
Living the dream.
Living the dream.
Favorite pool in Vegas with...
The Hard Rock.
Hard Rock?
Yeah.
Good food?
Well, when I was there, it was like Wednesday nights was... I forget what they called it, but it was only restaurant people, so...
Oh, industry nights.
It was debauchery.
I went to the Mexican restaurant in the Hard Rock my last time out there. The Pink Taco.
Vulgar name.
What... You know, this is actually, I didn't expect you to talk about Vegas, but it's a great dichotomy out there because it's some of the worst things in the world. Yeah, in whatever it is, culture and things like that.
Sure.
But in food, you have some of the best restaurants in the world,
yeah,
but it's sort of, I don't know if people really care about the food there more than just like the name. What was your feeling? Okay.
You need to have high-end things, and you need to have recognizable things. So if people are, you know, they see these names and they see, you know, with Bobby, like Caesar's Palace, big thing was they wanted his cookbooks all in the front. So when people walked right in, they were like, look, we have a chef,
right?
You know, author. So,
but the chefs are still cooking really good. They're not, I mean,
absolutely.
They could be serving way below standard stuff.
No, I mean, you'll get called out on it instantly in Vegas. There's so many people.
Oh, really?
It's so in the press, and there's so many people talking about it that, you know, as soon as a restaurant...
No, that's fine, but what about the actual people there? Not the actual people who work in Vegas.
What do you mean?
Do they care? Like, do like the like people? Patrons. You know, people who get off the boat from Madison Nowhere.
I think Madison Nowhere.
Eliminating listening base.
Well, that was the thing. Like,
sorry, Wisconsin.
Especially with like the Food Network people, yeah. It's like maybe they can't afford to go to New York City for vacation, but they mm-hmm. could have a New York City right. chef. You know, right. the okay. opportunity.
I also just want to shout out Madison, Wisconsin. Go Badgers.
That I wasn't actually talking about Wisconsin. I was talking about Madison, Kentucky. That's not even real. No. Anyway, so you're in Vegas. You're working for Chef Flay.
Yep.
And you're there for 3 years?
No. Well, in Vegas, I was only there 9 months.
Or 9 months.
And then he needed an exec chef in New York. And yeah, he moved me over there.
At Mesa?
At Mesa Grill. Yep. So in 1 year, I moved 3 times, twice across country.
Wow. Sort of like being a real hockey player.
Yeah, right. I got traded.
So were you looking to wind up in New York eventually?
I mean, what chef wouldn't, right? Like, the opportunity came up, and it was like, yeah, I think
that's it, right?
If you're going to be a chef, I think the dream is to work in Paris or in New York City.
Well, some people say San Francisco or Portland or things like that.
When I moved to Las Vegas, my goal was to move to San Francisco, but I knew I couldn't afford it. So I figured I would go to Vegas, I would save up enough money, and then I would go to California. Exactly. And so instead, you know, I got moved back to
New York. So then you were with Bobby for another 2+ years.
Yeah, 2 years in New York as exec chef.
How was working with him?
It was great. Like, Bobby and I were friends, and like, he absolutely was, you know, very generous to me. And
he's a generous guy. I've worked for him. He got, you know,
you always had unique opportunities. Like, I did the show Iron Chef with him. It's like, what other restaurateur could you work with that you could do that on a regular basis?
And yeah. How did you like your experience on Iron Chef?
It was awesome. It's like playing football. It's like, you just run it around, and it's...
Oh, so you were like part of his like continuing team.
I was a sous chef on 18 episodes.
So did you feel that like you, like, let's say by episode 10, you were beginning to like hit a stride, like a rhythm?
Definitely. I was always nervous on the show, but you know, you got to know how everything worked. You know, you knew where the cameramen were going to be. You knew what you could do, what you couldn't do. And I had a lot of fun.
Best dish, worst dish?
Well, the worst thing, I had to make a gnocchi. It was a goat cheese battle. I made goat cheese gnocchi. And one of the judges said, we all discussed what our opinion, what our idea of the perfect gnocchi was, and this isn't it. That's the worst thing anyone has ever said to me.
That's pretty passive.
Yeah, it was bad.
And best thing you made there?
Well, the whole fish, I think. I did the Barramundi battle.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one. It was like a whole fried Barramundi and like an Asian vinaigrette, which is weird because now I work in an Asian restaurant, and at the time I wasn't at all, and so for me to do that, and Bobby was like, this is awesome. Like, someday maybe you should work in Asian. And sure enough, I did.
Thank you, Iron Chef,
for showing
me the way.
So now you're sitting atop. You work for Bobby.
I work for Steven Starr.
No, but you worked for Bobby. Yes.
We're still in the past.
Got it.
How did you go from what is arguably, you know, the king of the Southwest cuisine to an Asian empire?
I wanted to change. I didn't necessarily want to go into Asian. I knew of Budokan, I knew of Steven Starr, and I knew he was going to be opening restaurants in New York. So, really, I just went on board with the company with the intention of, you know, going to the next restaurant that they opened. But the economy became what it was, and so he, you know, the two restaurants that he was planning to open did not open. And so they offered me a position at Budokan, and I just stayed, and now I'm the executive chef.
Amazing. Just like that.
Just like that.
You two kids.
Yeah. Just, you know, so, hang out for a while.
So
yeah. Wait for a recession.
Yeah. So, as a chef, give to us and the listeners at home. Hi, listeners. This is my radio voice. I'm right. What is Budokan like?
Budokan is... Well, the name Budokan is... it's a stage in Japan. It's like a theater. And Budokan has a very theatrical feel. It's opulent. It's a huge space. It looks like a venue. So I think the idea of our food is like our food is on stage every night. So that's our intention. That's what we try to do. And it's huge. We'll do 1,000 covers on a Saturday night.
Just give someone an idea. Like, you know, most of the places that we eat around here, it's like a cramped rectangle with two, like maybe two people. How many people are in the back of the house?
How many people working? All staff.
Total staff back of the house is 65, I think, right now. Total staff is probably 150.
So 65 on like a Saturday night.
Well, at one time, no. That's total staff. That's, covering people's days off. On a Saturday night, we have 6 people on wok, 3 on fish, 3 on meat, 4 on hot app, 3 garmage, 4 pastry, a full-time prep guy just at night. And then in the morning, we have a whole dim sum crew. All our dim sums handmade every day. We have, you know, 12 or 15 Cantonese women who are there every morning. They make all the dumplings by hand. Nothing's frozen.
You can't replace that. Those you women, can't, those women are just, they
yeah.
rock it.
Yeah. Sometimes people ask me to do demos and I'll show them, like, take them a tour of the kitchen, show them the dim sum crew and everybody's impressed. And then I show them how to make one. And somebody just 2 weeks ago, they were like, yeah, the girls, they make that a lot better than you. Yeah. It was like, okay, they make 1,000 edamame dumplings a day.
And they're,
like,
they're not even thinking. No, it's just like muscle.
They're talking and goofing around.
Yeah.
So I have a question. I, not knowing very much about the structure or hierarchy of a restaurant like this, an executive chef, does that mean you're actually capable and proficient in creating every item on the menu, and then therefore you're able to do quality control? Or is
absolutely.
It, and it's administrative as well?
I would say the people who do it on a daily basis are probably at this point better at it than I am, but I can oversee. If I have to, yes, I can do everything in the restaurant.
Amazing.
When I first started working there, you trail on every station. And so you just, you know, it's up to you how much dedication you want to put into each station. And I wanted to, and I just wanted to see how everything is done. And it was totally unique to me because these are, you know, even cooking techniques that I've never seen before, never done before. It's, you know, when you're a Western style chef, everything has roots in French cooking. So once you know French cooking, you can branch off into everything else. But once you get into Asian, then there's a lot of, you know, right. things you've never seen or don't understand.
What was the toughest thing to accomplish or approach from not having an Eastern background and master?
Ingredients. Like, because when you come up with a dish, it's easy to you. You're like, oh, you know what? This needs a little butter. This needs a little cream. But like when they say, we should use water chestnut flour in this, and you're like, why water chestnut flour? I don't understand. So it was a lot of just going to Chinatown and just looking at ingredients that I didn't know what it was, bringing it at home, tasting it, trying to figure out what to do with it.
So about how long from, you know, day one to you were like, I feel proficient or expert-like?
As far as the food goes, I don't know that I do feel like an expert. Like, yes, I am proficient. I do rely on my other chefs. Dale Talday is a friend of mine. Mm. He's on Top Chef right now. I look to him. Like, he helps me with food because I'll have an idea. And then, you know, between the two of us, we can come up with something great.
So to kind of follow up on Amrit's question, because it's so rare we get an executive chef here. What is, you know, day-to-day versus long-term, you know, how is it executed and, like, how is the staff managed in a way of, like, trust and how do you see yourself? I can only ask you because everyone's...
And I just want to follow up, second part to that, are you a, like, hands-on in there every day as executive chef, or are you, like, sending text messages to, you know, a galley of people who are running the place for you?
Well, it's both. It's a... you know, the corporate structure, the way it is, I have a lot of I have a lot of business responsibilities. Right. I have to do food costs, labor costs, and, you know, things like that. But no, I am there every day, you know, minus a day off or two. But yeah, I definitely look to other chefs. It's a struggle if, you know, you don't have, you know, you want somebody to be in charge of food costs and labor costs, but you always have to, you know, you definitely have to supervise them a lot. In a restaurant like this, like, one small mistake can throw you off.
Right, because there's so many covers.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we're going to take a quick pause. I have 1,000 more questions about the good and the bad and the inside of a restaurant like Budokan. Thank you for listening to us. We're Snacky Toots on Heritage Radio.
We have Amrit from Stereogum coming up in the second half of the hour.
Talking all things South By.
Yes.
He'll be telling us all his favorite barbecue spots, right?
Yeah, all about meat.
Yeah.
Everything you want to know about meat.
Yeah.
That's what Sarigum does.
What are you playing?
I'm going to play the new single off the Explosions in the Sky, Take Care, Take Care, Take Care album.
Do we have 12 minutes?
No, it's really short. They actually put out a single. It's called Trembling Hands. Needless to say, this has been one of the most anticipated records I've been looking forward to for years. And it sort of snuck up. Like, I had no idea that they were releasing an album. So here we go. One of my favorite bands in honor of South by Southwest on Snacky Tunes.
I'm gonna have to get that from you.
I sent it to you last night.
I'm gonna have to download that.
One of my favorite South by South moments, that was Explosions in the Sky. Trembling Hands was, was it last year or 2 years ago? It was kicking off their 10-year anniversary tour. Was it 2 years ago? And they played down a free show at the park, and they started at dusk, and it went to nighttime, and the last like 2 or 3 minutes was just a giant fireworks display as they finished.
That's amazing.
It was amazing. It was one of those things where
literally Explosions in the Sky.
Oh.
Anyway, you're listening to Snacky
Tunes. Hold on.
We're your host, Finger on the Pulse. We are
making astute observations about literal things. Anyway, yeah. Anyway, we're gearing up for South by Southwest, but before we get there, we're talking to Chef Brian Ray, co-executive chef at Budokan, and we were just getting into the nuts and bolts of a service night. Now, Budokan is a hands-down tourist destination, right next to Chelsea Market.
Absolutely.
People come from all over the world to come eat there. What is the normal makeup of the people that eat there, and can I ask what the normal dress code is? Because I know that a lot of people who come to restaurants like this from out of town don't always go to the nines.
It's true. I mean, like I said, we're a very theatrical feel, very clubby kind of, and being in the meatpacking district, you know, you have a lot of people going to clubs. So I would say the dress code is club, kind of, like you're going out for a night.
So people start there?
They start there, they end up there.
How late are you open?
We serve food till 1 in the morning on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So
We're just leaving the house about then.
Yeah, well, come on in.
We're not from out of town. So, you know, with a place like that, and you were talking before the break about operating costs and changes, things like that, what is the process of changing a dish on the menu? Because I imagine, especially, unless it, you know, it pulls from other ingredients that you're already working with, which, you know, having an Asian theme, a lot of things overlap ingredient-wise, but creating something that's new, what's the process, what's the cost, you know, who has to sign off on it to get something new on the menu? And how often are you changing the menu?
We change it seasonably. We do have a core menu that will never change. They're our signature dishes.
Which are?
Like our tuna tartare spring roll, our edamame dumpling, our General Tso's chicken dumpling.
Mm.
Like these things, they'll always be there. Our filet mignon, it's the bread and butter of the restaurant. But there's other things that, you know, we could change seasonably and, you know, show our kind of creative side. And that's when I look to the other chefs, you know. Like you'll have an idea for a dish and then, you know, you always want to keep the roots in Asian food, and then, you know, you just push it to see how far you can go.
So that goes back to our question before the break. It's like when you want to start making specials, is it either it's like, hey, I would like to do this, does it come from Steven Starr, or do your chefs, and like, is the dialogue open enough where people can say, hey, we should try this, or how does that work?
To run specials, yeah, we don't need to run anything by Steven. We'll definitely check the opinions of the front of house servers to see if this is something that, you know, they feel they could sell. We check the opinion of the you know, the managers and our directors to make sure that it fits with the theme of our restaurant. But once we have something that's a hit that sells well and that everybody's happy with, then we'll approach Steven to, you know, to put it on the menu.
Interesting. And so there's a strong communication with the front of the house about the...
Absolutely.
Talk to us on when everything's humming. When everything's in rhythm, Saturday night, and it's just
balls to the wall.
But like, let's first talk about the good. When it's an aces night. What's that feeling? What's it like? What's the energy?
Yeah, it's very like, you know, you feel like you're in a competition or you're in a, you know, an event, and like when it's done, you feel like you won something because it's like you're moving and it's like everything kind of does feel like it's in the balance. It's like somebody said, if it feels like you're running 200 miles an hour and if you trip, it's, you know, you're dead. So
yeah, everything's fine as long as the forward momentum is kept.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the weeds. Let's talk about the flip side and what it means to be buried and things to be going awful in a restaurant that size. And yes, what people who think the weeds of a 40 seater or 40 top can't understand what it's like to be that down.
So we have a 7-foot table. That's the Chef Expo table. Tickets come in, and on app side and on entree side, if you're in the weeds, for the entire length of that table is all tickets. So at one
7
point,
feet of tickets?
Yeah, you could have, you know, 300 people's food, you know, right there. So either appetizers or entrees. So if you get in the weeds on the entree side and the appetizer side, it's two-man expo. If the app side is running well, you know you're going to get all those tickets at the same time too. So it's definitely your heart is racing, and it's a very mental challenge.
And as executive, like, how do you coach younger chefs to get out of the weeds? Like, what tips do you give them?
So, you know, well, there's a lot of things you'll do for, like, you'll look, if you're on the appetizer side, you'll see if there's, like, tickets that only have one or two apps and they're in the window to sell them. You know, you always tell them to keep an eye on ticket times and just, you know, as soon as you're waiting for something, don't wait for a line cook assuming that they know that the food's coming. Like, just constantly remind them, like, hey, you have all day, you have four rock shrimp coming. All day, you have, you know, three duck salad, right? And of course, they're going to say, yes, chef, I have it. But if you didn't say that, you know. You
might right. And because maybe the time they go, yes, chef, they go, crap, chef, I don't have it.
And you have to constantly be paying attention. The second you stop paying attention, you know, that's you're tripping and falling right there.
Do you have music in the back?
We do not. I don't think I could handle that, actually.
But you have music in the front.
Absolutely.
What's the vibe of the music?
We have a company that comes in and they do all of our music. They set it all up. Steven Starr will come in and he'll, you know, say no way on this song or yes on this song. But he has a music background. He started in, you know, a concert promoter. So,
what do you like to hear in the dining room?
I don't know. We have a mix of everything. Like, my musical taste, actually, it's one of my questions that I ask people when I interview them. I say, what's the first concert you went to? And you can always tell a lot about somebody, like, even if it doesn't matter what the band is that they say, but how they react to it. Like, they'll be like, yeah, I saw Van Halen, or like, or they're embarrassed, like, my first concert was Britney Spears.
Wait, what was your first concert?
The Grateful Dead.
Amrit?
My parents took me. It was Faith No More and Billy Idol.
Darren?
Lollapalooza 95. I went the one with the Boston and Pavement.
I saw The Pretenders with my dad.
The Pretenders?
Yeah. Actually, and Material Issue.
That was the first one?
That was the first one. I'm sure there might have been more, but the first one that, like, you know, left an impression.
The first show that I went to that wasn't, like, I think was Superchunk, Seaweed, and Governor.
Yeah.
And we all pass, essentially. Yeah. We all pass. Nice word.
So what do you cook when you're at home? What do you listen to when you're in your kitchen?
Well, what I cook at home, I do love, you know, Bobby Flay. I do love Southwest flavors. I do love Mexican food. I do love French food.
Do you like cooking when you get home after cooking for 1,000?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm one of the few chefs that do. I remember when I first met Dale. I love Dale. He's a great friend of mine. But when I first met him, he didn't own pots and pans. He was like, absolutely not. He's like, on my days off, I go out to eat.
Right.
Which is great because he does absolutely do a lot of research. But no, on my days off, I figure if I'm going to, you know, cook for complete strangers and I'm going to, you know, push myself to do that, like, and if I'm not cooking for myself and for my family, then...
What's your favorite meal to make at home for you and the ones you love?
My girlfriend, she loves seafood. She loves whole fish. Summer's coming. As soon as I can barbecue, I barbecue.
Nice. You have a grill?
I do. A Weber charcoal.
Love it.
Yep.
Classic.
I lived in Manhattan for 6 years, and I couldn't have a grill, and I finally moved to Brooklyn, and I have outdoor space, and I can barbecue. And
take that, Manhattan.
Exactly.
We got one of your chefs.
I have a picture of it, actually. When I first moved to Brooklyn, I said, I'm barbecuing this weekend. I don't care. And it was pouring rain, and it was cold and snowy, and my girlfriend has a picture of me outside with an umbrella, you know, grilling in the cold and snow. I said, I don't care.
Yeah, it's fine. So, I mean, you went from, you know, a young chef to now overseeing one of the biggest chefs. What advice do you give to people when they're starting out? Because obviously, look at you and they're like, how do I get to here? Which you'll never say, but like,
yeah, and in New York, like
in New York,
sure. Yeah. How do you get there?
Yeah, every restaurant that I worked at, I had a specific thing that I wanted to work on. Like, I first worked for a French master chef, and he taught me how to cook more than anyone has. So, you know, for the time I was with him, I got as much out of that one particular thing. When I went to Vegas, I was kind of looking. I wanted to learn the business because. Yeah, you're working for a chef, but you're also working for Caesar's Palace, and you have a P&L, profit and loss meeting, every week. And so that taught me the business side. So while I was there, I got as much out of, you know, the corporate world as I could. So, you know, to become an executive chef, I do have to know I have a lot that I have to deal with. So, and not just food related.
How often do you find that chefs are almost ignorant on the business side of things?
Oh, all the time. Actually, probably the better the chef is in cooking, the worse they are on... You know, because they don't care. They're like, I don't care. I want truffles. They're artists. Absolutely. No, it's wonderful.
It's wonderful until, you know, it's not.
But it's the heartbreaking side. It's like, that's why the best restaurants can fail. It's because, like, I don't care. I'm going to make the best food, and the food is the best. And then a year later,
like that movie, was it Big Night?
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You seen that movie that mm-hmm. Mirror? Yeah. And then finally, what's it like when you have to be the bad guy and the boss at a restaurant like that? Like, what's the approach, or what's the style, especially if it happens, you know, do you do you take someone to task on Saturday night, or is it like the comic collected and just put a pin in it till Sunday morning?
I mean, no, I think you need to deal with the problem right away, whatever it is, and you kind of have to be cold about it, and it's just like, it's business, and so...
Plate thrown? Yelling?
No, I don't really yell. I don't really... No, it's just, you know...
More like that gnocchi comment?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought about duck breast and what I'd really enjoy, and Chef, this is not it, right? Something like
that? Exactly.
Well, Chef, thank you so much for being with us. What's the website?
BudokanNYC.com.
And if I want to make a reservations for a Saturday night, how far in advance do I have to call? Or
we take reservations a month in advance. Yeah, if you want a Saturday night at 7:30,
a month in advance. That's not bad.
Yeah,
baby, we're going out in a month.
I mean, that seems. I mean, I guess maybe as a New Yorker, that seems like reasonable to me that a month wait is fine.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, well, thank you so much. You can stick around for a little bit. We'll eat some pizza.
Thank you.
That was great.
That was great. I got a couple songs.
And then after the break, we have Amrit from Stereo Gum talking about South by Southwest.
He's in the massage chair right now, sipping green tea.
Yeah. So we're going to call him out afterwards.
All right. So listen. So here we go. Here are two bands that I'm looking forward to see at South by. I think they're both playing. I have no idea. But you're listening to Snacky Tunes on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Get the comp. It's fantastic. Shut up. And that was just Tennis. Looking forward to seeing them at South by Southwest. That was
before that
Baltimore, and before that was the OC's Castor Tackle.
You know, I saw the OC's for the first time last year. My friend who lives down there goes to UT, and she brought me up to like the rec center, and the OC's are playing, and they were amazing. And I'm excited to see that they're doing very, very.
They're doing really well.
What's so prolific?
Yeah. What's your what's
Hold
your second?
Let's do this. Now the second part of the show, we have Amr from Stereo Gum.
The show's just one whole piece.
I know, but this is the second part. Amrit, before we get into this, let's let everyone know why you're such an authority on what we're about to talk about.
Are you asking me to sell myself?
Just like a 30-second, like what we did before.
Well, like Samson, he's powered by his hair, yeah. And his knowledge of music comes
this
from
is
those.
You should be listening to me, everybody.
Delicious locks.
Well, no, but you know what's the 30-second of who you
what's
are?
Your well, elevator pitch me on yourself.
Yeah. Perfect. I hope there's some casting directors listening to this. I am the executive editor of a website called StereoGum. .com.
Also an upstart.
On the internet. Yeah, it's we're up and coming. I do it in my boxers. We have a couple of writers. We have a sister site called VideoGum, which is about film and television. But StereoGum has been, you know, something of, you know, at least some people consider it to be some sort of an authority on independent music for since 2002. And listen to that. Yeah, and you know that's it. We're going down to South by Southwest. And
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Also, Amrit is our de facto festival buddy. When we show up, he's always at the festival.
Actually, that is not true.
Ooh.
Because I had to convince Amrit to come join
to
Pitchfork last year.
Yeah, but then we were. But then we hung out. No, I'm saying when we all make it to festivals.
Yeah.
So let's before we get into the bands. Mm-hmm. For the handful of people who don't know what South by Southwest is, it's a big music festival
and film
and interactive that takes place in Austin, Texas, which is usually kind of like the signal of spring and, you know, things to, at least for me, it's spring, things to come. And more so than I feel like what we have here for CMJ, a really big gathering of, you know, the huge kickoff.
Oh, it's a real happening, my man.
It's a real happening.
Real,
I mean, it's in Austin.
Gathering of the people.
Yeah. And bands go down there to make it. I mean, that's. I mean, I say that with a smile on my face because that's.
Now, before we get into this year, idea. Who made it last year, Amrit, your opinion? Who broke out 2010?
Here's my thing with South by Southwest. I don't really ever feel that there. I mean, that there really is a breakout band.
That is actually the correct answer.
I mean, you know, so you'll have if you're a writer with a beat and you know you have to like go cover it for some magazine or paper, you will crown someone the breakout band, but that will be based on the five friends that you have who've been consistently telling you what they saw and maybe the number of times a band played. Like I remember CMJ, I think in 2010 maybe, or 2009, regardless, Surfer Blood played like 16 times, and so they were considered the breakout band of CMJ because they played a lot and they did do well coming out of that festival, but it was also based on a lot of other things as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah,
know,
but isn't
we
that
talk
part of the equation?
But
Sure. I mean, you do what you can to get a lot of attention. There's a lot of things being thrown around. There's a lot of signal noise ratio is kind of out of whack. So you do what you can to cut through it.
Yeah. Right? Saturday night, this new up and coming rapper, Kanye West, I think.
Kanye South by Southwest. That's right.
I think he's either DJing or I don't know. He's doing something Saturday. He's got something coming up.
Well, that's the thing, actually. You know, so Stereogum, you know, we report about news and we review bands and videos and things like that. This morning before heading out to the studio to meet up with the brothers here, we posted about Kanye's announcement in Austin. And my angle on that was, you know, in 2009, he confirmed South by Southwest and he ended up playing the Fader Fort and he brought out Common and Erykah Badu, and it was a really fun show. But I remember looking back at that post when he confirmed that rumor in 2009, there was a sense of excitement like in my post about it, because it was like, oh my god, you know, Kanye is playing South By. And the nature of the industry has been changing for years, but still at that point it felt like a shift in the perception of for the festival itself and for Kanye. It's like, wow, this really big star is like deigning to like grace us with his presence at this like really small industry festival. And for the industry festival, it's like, well, maybe it's not really an industry festival anymore. Maybe, I mean, it's been attracting bigger names for a while now, but that was a moment where it's like, okay, things are really changing. As far as today's announcement, and maybe it's also because Kanye's been teasing it with like Vivo clips for the last while. And Vivo is like YouTube's cousin site that makes money, actually.
Yeah.
Kanye's been teasing it, but this morning he actually released a video where he confirmed it, and it just kind of felt like on the nose for South By and Kanye at this point. Like, in my mind, and it's been a shifting perception for probably a decade now, but over the last 2-3 years at this point, it's like, sure, of course Kanye's doing South By Southwest. That makes sense from his perspective and South By.
And there's, and if you think about that in the way that, I guess, I feel like South By Southwest originally started was for like young bands to have a chance to be seen, and I guarantee there's gonna be a lot of great bands playing Saturday night.
Certainly.
That are gonna be not seen by people who are waiting in line trying to see Kanye.
No, and also this year is Arts and Labor, Eric Horn, all those guys are putting out that big documentary on South by Southwest, looking back on the first 25 years, and to see where it started and where it is now. It's not the same thing.
Oh, it's not at all.
But can you blame them?
No, of course not. I mean, a lot of that is also just because, I mean, definitionally and necessarily, the nature of the festival has changed. It was, when it was founded, it was a chance for the industry to congregate and decide what they were going to be talking about for the next year. It was like a trade expo, you know? And so everyone who wrote about music, everyone who signed music to labels and the whole mechanism of the industry would be meeting up and discovering bands. But now the internet has does that.
Yeah, it's decimated the relevance.
You don't need it. So what's the point now? Well, to gin up more press, for people to party, for connections to be made. I mean, people aren't actually getting signed at South by Southwest anymore.
But there are a lot of tacos being eaten.
There are certainly are. And there's a lot of really wonderful tequila, too.
I mean, I think the last band, and I don't enjoy saying this at all, the last band that, like, I think really had broke up between either South by Southwest or CMJ was Sleigh Bells last year.
Sure.
CMJ, where they had, like, 75 people at the show, and Spike Jonze was one of them. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, but it's like...
I was at that show.
Of course you were.
But
I mean, besides that, but also the story behind them is like, okay, they kind of broke up, but also the two of them have such strong industry, connections.
The real story behind them is that my mom discovered them.
No,
that's not. That's the truth. That's honest to God truth.
What?
Derek lived in my hall. Derek lived in my hall in my building in Williamsburg, and used to do laundry with my mom in the laundry room while my mom would be looking after my dogs, and I'd be at music festivals. And he gave my mom the Sleigh Bells demo before anybody had it. My mom would constantly get on my back every time she'd come to visit me. She's like, "Have you listened to Derek's demo yet? It's so good."
So what? And did you listen to it?
I did, but I did around CMJ. By which point, Sasha Ferrer Jones and lots of other people were also already listening to him. So, you know, we wrote about them as early as anybody else. But I could have been.
You could have been.
Could have been a lot more. And you know, it's not about that, but it's just sort of funny that It is for so many.
It
people,
is,
sure.
And that has also been the reason why I no longer have any faith or stock in the majority of music blogs, the festival like this, because everyone's trying to be like, oh, have you seen this band?
Yeah.
It's like, well, are they actually good, or do you think that they might be the next big thing, and you're just trying to, like, put your bets in early?
There's a lot of that. And, you know, so for me, going down to Austin, it's not really about discovery, but there are a lot of bands I'm excited about. It gives an opportunity for someone in my position who's listening to new music all year to actually frame, you know, my recent listening habits and to give suggestions, which, you know, I can talk about a couple of bands that I'm excited.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, another self plug, we're throwing, Sarigum's throwing two shows down there.
It's actually just called promotion.
Okay,
it's not a self plug.
Sorry, I'm getting used to this. You guys are so good at it. It's
that's like that comment about your dish. The new, yeah. You guys are so good at this. Okay,
I have my idea of hosts that are good at this, and you're not it. So Sarigum, the party is when and where?
There's two of them, one's on Thursday night, and we're doing it with the Sacred Bones label. And there's it's a really gothy lineup. And there's like rock music and dance music,
Witch House,
folk
if you will.
Music. Actually, yeah, just veering to the darker side of Witch House, really.
Who's playing?
We have Pop 1280 and Trust. The two bands that I'm really excited about, though, are three bands. One's called Soft Moon. One is called Chelsea Wolf. One's called Liturgy. And finally, Zola Jesus. And Zola Jesus is actually amazing, as is Chelsea Wolf and Liturgy. But why don't we take a listen to some Zola Jesus so people can understand why she's so wonderful.
Great. You are listening to Snacky Tunes. And today is going to be a little different. We're going to play
snippets
of songs because there's so much music that we want to cover. But you know, we'll give you enough of a taste.
Let's settle in.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Remix. What are we...
That was Zola Jesus?
That's Zola Jesus. She's, I think she's about 22. She's from Madison, Wisconsin.
No. No way.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I swear she's from Madison.
Oh.
She's a Russian-American who lives in Madison. Maybe she was born in Russia.
But, what label is she on?
She's on Sacred Bones. And that's who we're doing this one of our showcases in conjunction with. And they have a really great lineup.
How did you pick one label out of all the labels that you work with?
Well, you know, we get approached by a lot of people to partner up on shows. We don't really have a need to because we have our own venue every year and we kind of do our own thing. But, you know, every once in a while we will partner up with someone because they, like, you know, for CMJ we did it with Pop Gun Booking because they helped us pull together a really great lineup. And so it's really case by case. With Sacred Bones, we've been posting about a lot of their bands, and they're just doing really great things. They have some good ears working there. Caleb and Taylor do great work. So yeah, Zola's one of them, but it's also with Chaos and Tejas. I don't really know their operation very well. But so it's like the three of us are coming together to put this show on. And another one, the band's, is called Liturgy. And just to kind of give you a sense of like the variety of music you'll be hearing there, this is Liturgy from their second album. It's called... That's still Zola Jesus. Sorry about that. It's from their third record, or the second record, rather. It's called Aesthetica. And it's on Thrill Jockey, which is sort of interesting for them, because they're kind of like something between black metal and punk. You can take a listen to this. It's pretty blistering. Pretty blistering, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of blowing your mind. All right, here we go. This is Generation by Liturgy. We'll be right back.
Blistering.
Blistering.
What time are they playing?
They're actually on, I think it's not as late as you would imagine from the sound of that music.
Yeah, but none of those times really apply.
That's true, yeah. Although Zoologies, Zoologies is the only play down there, and it's going to be at Beerland. And if anyone is listening to this and actually going down to Austin, you don't need a badge to get into this show, which is kind of great. Yeah, it's a tiny. It's a Austin institution too.
Wait, it's Beerland. That's where Beerland. Your showcase at.
Yeah,
you would like to know that that is the first place I ever DJed. That's where I started my DJ career about seven years ago.
Everything's just folding in on itself.
Called Stay Classy Sunday Nights. It did not.
So that's your one showcase. And what is the other showcase?
The other showcase is on Saturday night. We're calling it Last Night in Texas. The Strokes are playing South by Southwest this year as well. So the Last Night is kind of a play on that band and their really glorious new album.
So enough about the old stalwarts. Who's the new heat?
Sure. So our show on Saturday night is going to be at the Pure Volume House. And it is open from midnight until 4 a.m.
Perfect. I have a 6:15 flight out on Sunday, so you solve so many of my problems.
That's where you need to be.
And thank you. Or thus created some new ones.
No, solved.
So we have Das Racist.
Das Awesome.
Cults.
Who?
Cults. Do you not know Cults? I should have brought some Cults for you. They're great.
Okay.
They're sort of like a throwback to like 50s era, like sweet
then girl I would love
groupie pop. It's really nice. Yeah, I mean, if you like it's like along the lines of what Tennis is doing.
Okay.
Tennis, we heard earlier in the broadcast. So we have Cults, Das Racist, Puro Instinct, Gold Panda, and Owen Pallett, who is a friend of these guys.
I forgot to tell you, I ran into Owen Patrick. He actually just debuted a piece at the Lincoln Center last week. Because that's what he does in his spare time.
For those who don't know, Owen Pallett, reborn as Final Fantasy, then reborn as Owen Pallett, is amazing. Check him out on Dinner with the Band.
He's really wonderful. So that's going to be a really great show. And those are five bands that, you know, a lot of people are going to be curious to see down there. They're bands with some pre-existing buzz. You know,
Open Bar, if I remember correctly.
Open Bar. Also my birthday. So
what?
Is a recipe for...
How old are you going to be?
46. I always forget. 46 or 47.
You look good.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, I remember that your birthday actually spanned all of South by Southwest last year.
It did. It did.
That's when Shelly and I became friends last year, was at the Stereogum Saturday Party.
Right. That's right.
We had Free Bloody Marys.
Didn't we see Hole together last year?
We did see Hole together.
God, what a mess. Want to talk about a mess.
Yeah, that was something.
Let's play some music.
Okay, yeah. So here's one of the bands that's playing that Stereogum Party. His name is Gold Panda. He's out of the UK. He is a really great producer. Every song, by the way, of every band that's playing South by Southwest starts with that beeping tone. I don't know if you know,
but
that's like the hip thing to do now. People are just doing that with their songs, particularly bands that are playing South by Southwest.
Boop, 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 boop.
It's pretty sweet. Here we go. Quitter's Raga by Gold Panda. We'll be right back. Skull Panda.
I mean, the other two bands are fine. That is exciting to me. that is just straight up that.
He is very exciting.
Is like Will Baths. From Baths.
Yeah, totally.
Who was on last week or two weeks ago.
Can we go back to a second and talk about the shift of the festival and what are some of the potential just disasters musically and performancely that are going to happen this year? Like, what do you see? Is it going to be a total just mess that's...
So negative today.
No, I mean, we could spend our entire show talking about the positives of everybody and anyone that comes into it.
Let's just tear them down.
No, but it's interesting to see that like the duality of a festival that's grown to this size.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you have a festival like this, any industry festival like this, you're going to be confronted with like lots of potential pitfalls, and the one main one is there's a temptation to, you know, to get back to what we were talking about earlier. There's this temptation to accept almost every invitation that you get to play a lot. The thought being that if you make yourself more visible, more people will see you. That's a good thing. You know, that's like the calculus for a lot of bands. At least that's the calculus that they undergo. And I think that there's a real danger with that for a couple of reasons. One, first being, you're never gonna put on a proper showcase for your talents and your band down at South by Southwest unless you end up at a sort of like exclusive-y type of venue where there's a dedicated sound guy, a light guy, you have a proper sound check. These things are nearly impossible to come by down in Austin. You know, and that to me is the main thing. I think if a band, you know, and not everyone's in this position, but if you can pick and choose wisely. Align yourself with the right media outlet or you know, whoever is the one branding your showcase. Make sure the venue is nice. Because the thing is, as much as you're just throwing yourself out there, if you don't have good quality control, people are going to see you in not your best light. And there are so many bands, there's so much information people are processing constantly that's going to be the impression they're going to take. And I mean, that happens to me all the time. My first impression of a band is like, okay, cool. I have 75 other bands to potentially think about. And now I know what you're like, and I'm not interested. You know, it's difficult to try to wade through the morass of like drunk people and terrible sound and actually get a fair impression of a band. So you have to be careful what you choose. I mean, that would be my biggest warning to bands that are going out there.
Yeah. And not making enough time to eat.
Yeah. Well, that is a big thing, too.
So why don't we get we'll get one more song in that you're excited about, and then we'll close out the show, and then we'll do a close-out song.
Did you wink at me?
Yeah, I winked at you. I'm upset.
Why are you upset?
Because this is the last show we're going to do for, like, 2 months.
Oh.
I can be upset about that.
Oh, yeah. And before we forget, please go to redcross.org to donate money for Japan.
sorry about that, everybody at home. I cleared my throat. I'm going to play a song by a band called Yuck.
Thank you for the album.
Yeah, they are from the UK. They have listened to a lot of 90s college radio.
Big time.
Like Pavement and also Pavement. Also Sonic Youth and Dinosaur Jr. A lot of Dinosaur Jr.
They're probably one of the most being marketed, geared positions as like the band to break out of South By.
Sure. Yeah. And
without,
you know,
a doubt.
That's one of the reasons why I'm going to play them right now. The other is because it's a different look than the other songs that you guys have heard at home today.
What song?
The song is called Getaway. It's the first song.
I have a feeling I know how it starts.
On their first album. I have a feeling you do as well. It starts just... like this.
Yeah.
good stuff.
Yeah, it's nice stuff. Brian, I wonder what your impression is of some of these bands.
You know, I am embarrassed to say this, that I didn't know anything you guys were talking about. Sure. I don't know any of this music. I feel so old and out of touch with reality, but I loved all the music you played.
Hold on a second. I have been buried at work for 5 months, and it's like I'm a music guy, and I think I know about like half the bands that I'm talking about.
We're talking. It's just like if you were talking to somebody who knew the ins and outs of secret Chinese ingredients,
okay.
And you'd be like, "Yeah,
that was
I'm
your
aware."
Water chestnut flower,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, here's a type of flower you've never heard of.
That is actually the correct answer. That is the equivalent of water chestnut flower. Is essentially Amrit's job.
that's a wonderful analogy.
Yeah,
I should put that.
But that is finder of water chestnut
for all flower. The negativity that we discussed here.
There's no negativity. It's just all sides of the coin.
But all the great things about
this,
and I know that we talked about Baths, but for CMJ, Baths and She Keeps Bees, who have both been on this radio show, were just bands I had never heard of, and that someone was like, hey, do you have 40 minutes? You want to come grab a beer with me and see that? And that is the beauty of South by Southwest. Like, we'll go see, you'll see 90% of the bands you see, most of us will be bands that we've heard of before, mm-hmm. but it'll be those bands that you see that you never heard of that you fall in love with, and that's what, you know, ties you to it.
And, you know, and another thing for, you know, bands who are going down to the festival, one thing to consider is, you know, the showcase and the lineup that you're going to be on, because if you can surround yourself by bands of interest or that are stylistically related, or the kinds of fans that you want to be attracting, the, you know, people are going to see the bands that they've seen before or know. That's what South by Southwest is about now. But if you can be in a bill, you know, with a stylistic cousin. Speaking
of which, Punches, our group, is going down, and we're playing two shows, the Bond Music Showcase with Jeffrey Jerusalem, Classics, and Wolfie, and another group of bands. And then Saturday night, we're actually DJing with Ocelot, Classics, and Moby.
Wow.
And then I'll be there, solo DJ set as Punches, Wednesday at 2 p.m. at the I Am Sound Party.
Wow.
So, but we took the route of playing a few shows and just making sure that they were, along with Bond Music Group, our booking agents who helped us, and we couldn't have done without, helped us, like, just go, this is what we're going to do. We'll make it there. Hopefully we can see them, but it's, you know, play with people that we think are really awesome artists and good fits.
Yeah, half the battle is getting your name on the right flyer.
Yep, it really is.
It really is. Anyway, Amrit, Chef, thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us.
We'll be by the restaurant sometime to eat.
I hope so, please.
Can we bring a little boombox?
Yes, please.
Awesome, yeah. Awesome. We are your hosts, Finger on the Pulse. Again, we will be off the next couple months, traveling and working. But if you want to pick up on, you know, what you might have missed, please go check out our podcast at iTunes, and then also go to FOTPNYC.com.
For the comp.
For the comp, which has been written up by NPR.
Guardian UK.
Huffington Post.
Time Out Eater. Yeah, thank you.
And we've been really, we feel very fortunate for this. And 70 episodes. Pretty amazing.
We should celebrate by getting a pizza.
Oh, no more pizza, please. I'm still excited every week to eat the pizza. I can still say that.
It's like a dog and the owner comes home. It's like, right pizza. Someone take pizza.
So, what are you going to play for us? What are you going to take? A whole song, mind you, everybody. We're going to play a whole song.
A whole song. All right. Well, I could go either of two routes for you guys. I can either go the route of the guy who's going to be a big press story coming out of this, James Blake.
Who's playing tonight.
Or I could give you another XL signing, Subtract.
Let's go with Subtract.
Subtract.
James Blake's already a story.
He's a South London dude. He is a producer who dabbles in two-step and Detroit techno. He might have a nice South by. And XL is an amazing label. Sorry, guys. That's just not it. This is it. Subtract. Living Like I Do.
Awesome. Thank you. And look for us at South by. If you enjoy Snacky Tunes, come talk to us. And
we're the twins.
We're those guys that look like each other.
Time. Oh, time. Got sucked into a culture, living like you do. Spend by the hour, living like you do. Can't make ends meet, living like you do. This life will turn you sober, living like I do. Reflect.
more.